Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, Matt Doyle. And we got a sub-appearance. Tom Bogert is here. It's that time of year. The scoops are flying. It's like an ice cream shop around here, except a little bit messier, a lot more mustaches. What's up, Tom? How you feeling, bro?
I'm feeling all right. How are you feeling, Andrew Wiebe? How are you feeling, Matt Doyle?
How does it feel to be a turncoat, to be on the other side of the aisle, to leave your space at SoccerWise even for a second to come join us here on Extra Time for a special, very special final show of 2024 in which we will go through all 30 teams and their transfer needs and stories. But you, sir, are crossing aisles.
In my athlete voice, I'd say, first of all glory to God. I'll let my agent handle this. I'm just trying to be the best version of myself, work hard on the field. It is always flattering to be involved in with such interest in such prestigious entities like Extra Time. You know that I came from Extra Time and I love this club, but, it's all in the hands of my agents. All glory to God.
And at the end of the day, David Goss has allowed you quite magnanimously to switch sides.
We had to give him some game.
We did it before the totals came out. So you can't really track us on how that works. By the way, the game totals are out. We'll talk about that. Speaking of David, he was in Colombia recently. And while he was there, Marino Hinestrosa scored the winner in the Copa Colombia against America de Cali. And then Steven Ramirez starts us off with a perfect update that only those who listen to this show would truly, truly care about. Well, those who listen and also Atletico Nacional fans. FYI, Dairon Asprilla, says Steven, scored in the first leg of the Colombian League final for Atletico Nacional, helping them earn a crucial 1-1 away draw before they play the second leg at home on Sunday against Tolima. Dairon doing Dairon things in November and December. So it's just proof that the more things change, the more they absolutely stay the same. And I just want to say, I went and watched that goal, Doyle. It is a leaping sort of scissor kick finish at the back.
Oh,
it is
hell yeah.
It's just one of, I can't help myself. I had to watch it multiple times and just really bask in its glow.
This is the Christmas gift that I wanted for 2024.
That
makes me feel good in a way that I didn't even know I could feel.
So, yeah, that's Dairon's like Santa. You know, he knows what you want deep in your heart, and he always delivers around this time of year. Hey, big news before we get to the transfer stuff. 2025 MLS schedule is officially out. Dropped at 2 p.m. Eastern time on this December 19th, Thursday. Just some basics, then we'll get into the reactions, guys. Conference opponents, home and home. So, you know, you do the math there. That would leave six games. Those six games will be back across the other conference. So each team will play home and away all their in-conference opponents because there are now, there are 14 games to be played against opponents. So 28 is the math there, plus six is 34. MLS will be back on February 22nd and 23rd. The first game, Inter Miami hosting New York City at Chase Stadium. That is on Saturday at, drumroll please, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. That is the sort of time that you will be seeing an awful lot of this season. An afternoon game leading into the night games on Saturday, and we'll get to Sunday in just a second, but there are now multiple afternoon games, both on Saturdays and Sundays, if you combine the two, every single match week by my math. I did a quick run through. You can correct me if I need to be corrected, but we will be seeing standalone games, and that is something we've asked for sure and wanted just to mainline more MLS. Then the first Sunday night game, and then this is the big news, Sunday night soccer, Galaxy hosting San Diego FC in San Diego's first ever MLS game at 7 p.m. Eastern time on February 23rd, the Sunday. That is the first, as I said, evening Sunday broadcast from the release, quote, new for this upcoming season, MLS Season Pass will broadcast a featured game on Sunday evenings with enhanced production and dedicated studio programming. And obviously all of these games, 500 some plus the playoffs, plus Leagues Cup, plus everything else is all on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Let's just start with that side of it, Doyle. For the sickos out there that want to watch their team, want to watch a little 360, but also want to get in like 2-3, maybe even 4 full games a weekend, this is just manna from heaven.
Yeah, this is the something closer to the schedule I was hoping we would get from the jump here. It just makes sense. And it gives fans of a team, I think a better runway to become fans of the league, right? If teams like the Crew or the, you know, the Galaxy or the Sounders are getting standalone time spots, there's a lot of MLS fans who don't get to watch those teams because they're always up against the home, you know, their home team in terms of that time slot. So I think this makes a lot of sense. I'm looking forward to having the chance to focus on one game myself because it hasn't been easy the past couple of years trying to watch 12 games at once on a Saturday night. Still holding out hope for the return of Viernes de Football at some point, but this is a step in the right direction.
Looking at the schedule, it does look like you're going to get a smorgasbord of teams. It's not going to be just the Miami and Messi on Sunday nights at 7 p.m., which seems to be sort of the designated time for this Sunday night soccer. And I'm just using that phrase. I don't know if that's what it'll be called. I don't know what the official name would be. That's just what rolls off my tongue the quickest. But it seems like there's been a distribution. So if you're thinking, oh my God, I'm only going to watch Messi in Miami, I'm only going to watch LAFC, I'm only going to watch the big teams, like, there are a number of games here that don't fall into that category. I see St. Louis a decent amount, Minnesota a decent amount, San Jose's dropping in here, Houston's dropping in here. So don't think it's just going to go one way.
The thing I like about this, I don't know most, but what I like about it a lot is that we do have a unique fan culture in this league. And these standalone games aren't just about getting to know the, you know, this team that you might only watch two times a year otherwise, but it's about getting to see what it's like in St. Louis on game day, or what it's like in, you know, Minnesota at that beer hall that they have at the stadium. Like, that's awesome. That's the type of storytelling that grows the league, that grows interest. Like, I liken it to college football. I'm not a college football fan at all, but sometimes I'll be flipping around the channels, and because Tom will tell me he has an $8,000 bet on, you know, some Division II team. Well, I mean, you're a degenerate, but it's fine.
What? Where is this just coming from, New Jersey?
But you see, you know, you see the Iron Bowl. You see Auburn versus Alabama. And it's not the play on the field that draws me in. It is the atmosphere in that stadium. It's the atmosphere when it's Michigan, Ohio State, when it's Notre Dame versus USC. And I think this gives us a chance, MLS, to sort of draw in fans in that same way. And I think that's something that maybe we've been missing the past couple of years.
And bask in that atmosphere, Tom. I mean, there's things that we all fell in love with the game. And before it was this nerdery and you know, publicized GAM and what's going to happen in the transfer window to the Vancouver Whitecaps, it was being at games. It was feeling that energy. It was watching a game, sitting down and just watching a game with people that you love or care about or hate, depending on, you know, I don't know how you do it, but.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes, so obviously the atmosphere stuff is incredible. And the first thing that comes in with the new time slots, in addition to sickos like us, sickos like our dear friends listening to this program, that we're going to be able to watch more live MLS, which is going to be fun and probably not entirely the best thing for our personal lives and our families and everything else. But that's okay. This is the life we chose. The other part of this is, like, we talk about the global audience on MLS Season Pass and stuff, right? At 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, that's 7:30 p.m. in England. That's 8:30 p.m. in Spain. I'd imagine a lot of people over there would be interested in checking out a Lionel Messi game. So that opens the door for more people to either become fans or just more people to watch the league when they say, oh, Lionel Messi's on. Because I'll say this myself. When Lionel Messi, like, at Barcelona, like, I didn't have beIN Sports. I didn't watch enough of him. I would always make a point to watch Champions League games. But, like, that's a real thing where, you know, oh crap, it's 7:30 p.m. in England. Like, oh, Messi's on right now? Yeah, I'll throw that on. So I think that that's another boost too.
I'm just going to throw out what I have. And look, I'm just quickly running through the schedule. It just came out. So I'll quickly throw out what I have on Sunday for the first couple weeks here, maybe through the end of March. So we have Galaxy San Diego in LA. We have Miami Houston in Miami. So you're getting your Miami there. You have Galaxy St. Louis. Okay, they're the champions. I can sort of understand here, but St. Louis gets in. You know, Atlanta, Miami, all right, more Miami, but Austin, San Diego, Portland, Houston, San Jose, D.C., St. Louis, Columbus, Minnesota, Dallas, LAFC, St. Louis. Like, you're getting a pretty decent mix on Sunday nights, and I think I'm extremely excited to see what this broadcast looks like, what this media environment looks like on MLS Season Pass. It's going to be another step forward, and it's something that we've all been asking for a little while now. Something else just you know, running you through sort of the nuts and bolts here. Rivalry week is going to be May 14th through 18th. The league will pause June 15th through 24th for the Gold Cup and Club World Cup. Of course, two teams in the Club World Cup, Seattle and Miami. Leagues Cup will be, as we know now, July 29th through August 31st. We don't know the official format. There are some rumblings out there about that. Sounders at Heart has a Sounder at Heart, I'm sorry, Jeremiah. I'm so sorry. Has a nice write-up on a possibility for that one. You should go check out. And then Decision Day is October 18th and a TBD so far on the playoffs and MLS Cup. But I would think that you're going to stick with close to what we had before, but you never know. You never know.
Can I read you a text from Jeremiah Oshan to me from yesterday? He said, that's why I bought soundersatheart.com, so when Weeby bleeps it up, I still get the traffic.
God. Oh, I'll never be cured. This is a lifelong illness. I'm so sorry, Jeremiah. Also, I just want to take this opportunity. When we talked about Jesus Ferreira and Paulie Arroyo, I know you've done reporting on that. I know you did some good reporting on that, Tom, and I'm not trying to take away the credit for you, but the original place I saw some of the advanced reporting, I think, was maybe Nico Moreno and Sounder at Heart.
Nico put out the Jesus Ferreira talks first, and I put out the Paulie Arroyo talks first. And I don't know why. I don't know why you're doing it like this, because you're putting me in position. I love Nico. I love Jeremiah. Like, they do incredible work.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what am I supposed to say here?
No, you just said what you had to say. It's perfect. It worked out. Everybody wins.
You were trying to bait me. I didn't know you were. You're not that sly.
Oh, come on. Let the offseason begin, Tom. It's your busiest time of year. Do you have a pit in your stomach as this begins, or is it excitement? How do you emotionally cope with a transfer window coming up?
Depends on the day. Depends on how I'm feeling just generally. It goes in waves. There was a day last week where it felt like I counted because I was curious. I took 31 phone calls in like a 12-hour span. And that doesn't count all of the texts and writing and everything on top of that.
I don't think I've taken 31 phone calls in a 12-month span. My God, man. It's brutal.
Yeah, I feel like a boomer with less text in there. it depends on the day. It depends on the story. It depends on, as you say, Weeby, if I'm being proactive and getting to be the first on it, or if I'm seeing a report out there and then getting mad that it wasn't May 1st. So it's just so much fun. I am extremely happy.
It is so much fun. I am having fun, and I am also happy and fulfilled. Open coaching spots: Atlanta, Philly, New York City, Vancouver, Toronto. Some rumors around those. There's a growing rumor on Atlanta and Ronnie Dialo, which we'll talk about in just a second as we go through all 30 teams. Just a reminder for you, these transfer windows open at different times. The European window opens January 1st. South America, they generally open around January 1st or the first week. And then Argentina is later around January 22nd. It's kind of all disparate. And then MLS in 2024, at least, opened on January 31st. Tom, any help that you have in understanding transfer windows would be important.
Yeah, the first quick clarification is transfer windows only matters in one, where the buying club is, and two, for registration. So MLS clubs are making signings right now, but because they're not playing any games, they don't need the window to open until January 31st this year, or in past years it's been February. It just needs to open before official competitions start. So there's no reason to have the windows open right now, because there's a finite amount of days that, that happens that January 31st was 2024, not this year. I apologize.
Regardless,
it's about registration. It's not about whether teams can try to sign players.
Great point. That's why he's here. If you're looking for little things that you need to know, and in fact, this is a big one for this particular transfer window and roster building, we'll get into that more on the available GAM totals next. 3DP, 3U22 model versus the 2DP, 4U22, 2 million in GAM model. And of course, we will break that down and try to say it quicker. 3-3 and 2-4 GAM. That's basically how your team is going to manage their salary cap, what benefits they're going to get from the choices they make. One of the benefits is obviously you get another DP, you get another top tier, top salary player. The flip side is if you go 2 DPs, you get another U22 player, which you can spend a lot of money on, but can't pay quite as much. And then you get 2 million in GAM, which is quite important. Before we get to the GAM, I just want to give Tom one opportunity for a little basic transfer literacy. You've already helped us out in terms of registration, sort of painting some pictures as far as what matters and why it matters. But as people scroll Reddit or Twitter or Blue Sky or sounder at heart. No, I'm just kidding. What should they be thinking about as they read rumors and reports and try to file them away under varying levels of legitimacy?
Yeah, so this isn't comprehensive, but a couple of these I think will help. Number one, if a player is linked with LAFC, the LA Galaxy, and Inter Miami on one tweet, guess what? It's probably not real. Two, if the person reporting it doesn't know what discovery rights or GAM is, wait until someone who does just to be sure that it is real. Number three, don't look at who a player follows on Instagram. Sometimes that's a harbinger of news, but other times it's just not real. So don't take that Instagram reporting 100% correct. And number four, it's silly season, folks. Be safe out there. Have fun and make of it what you will.
Number three seems like a direct shot at Caelan Cardwell. I don't know how to, you know, Instagram reporting. It seems like you just...
I mean, Caelan's been spot on with his Instagram reporting in the past, but Caelan's a professional. He's well trained.
Right. Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
You know,
these amateurs out here, they don't operate at the same level of credibility as our.
And
Caelan
look,
Carr.
This is something to bring it back to college football. Instagram reporting has been a big part of college recruiting for a long time. And a lot of Alabama folks have been getting burned the past couple of recruiting cycles because they're doing that Instagram reporting, and then the NIL comes in, and suddenly those kids are going to Texas. So it's a brave new world out there.
I had no idea this is where we're going. I had no idea that you knew this much about college football and the intricacies therein.
Well, I learned it from college basketball because Kansas actually stole a recruit from UConn ahead of last year.
Yeah, that didn't work out for us.
That recruit was Nick Timberlake, and that's why we got Cam Spencer, who led us to a national championship.
Yeah, I just walked into that one. I walked right into that one. All right, it took a long time. We ran, we walked, we jogged, we crawled, we begged, we stole. And finally, GAM totals are available for Major League Soccer clubs. Huzzah! It doesn't feel as good as I thought it might feel. It feels like there's a sense of relief here, and that's followed by, now hold on, how did they get this much GAM? Why does the GAM discrepancy this way? Because all we have are the raw totals. We don't have the sort of back-end accounting that you would want to sort of lead into, like, well, why does Atlanta United have so much? You can guess. It's almost certainly the transfers on a record setting pace that they made last year. Okay, well, like, why does the Houston Dynamo not have very much GAM at all here? Well, it's because they've had a challenging salary cap for about three or four seasons and have happened to be pay it forward. So we're going to figure those things out step by step as more and more access to CSOs happens, and these numbers and the knowledge of them becomes more accepted and understood. But let's just start with you, Tom. How does this change your job, knowing how much GAM each team has?
Yeah, more information is good, but like you said, it's not the complete picture. So again, this is a net positive. I know that Paul Tenorio somewhere is shedding a happy tear that more transparency is coming in. This has been his life's work, and every drip that comes out is more. What I will say is, you can paint broad strokes with this. You look, like you said, with Atlanta United, they have the most GAM, 6.5 million. The most valuable way to regenerate GAM is selling players, not just players, homegrown players. So 11 million for Caleb Wiley, I'm sure, really boosted their total. What this does is it shows you broad strokes of, okay, this is why Atlanta can buy down Sion Gregerson and Bartosz Schlees to open another DP spot. But you have to be careful of, like, that doesn't mean that they're going to make a $1.5 million GAM trade or reading assumptions in there. Some of these teams already have their GAM allocated to, okay, these are the players that we need to buy down. So again, this is generally good, but just be careful because it's not the complete picture.
So what would you take it away?
That sigh of, the sigh of relief you were talking about, like, oh, we finally have access to this. I mean, we've been waiting. Wait, when was allocation money introduced? Like
17?
2002? No.
What?
TAM was introduced in 2015, but 15. Like general allocation money is at least 20 years old, and we've never known the amount that teams have. And it's fantastic to get a look at this. We always want more. I look at it as a perspective of from the perspective of an NBA sicko. I could tell you all about the repeater tax in the NBA. I could tell you about traded player exceptions. I could tell you about all this stuff that drives engagement and interest and gets people hooked and sort of further down the rabbit hole, or the spiral, if you want to have a negative connotation for it. And I know that the NFL is the same way, and MLB to a lesser extent is the same way. There's a little bit of it in European soccer because of financial fair play rules, but it's not as much. Still, the transfer window and understanding how your club operates is such a fundamental part of being a soccer fan. And it's a part that we've been missing as a league. And so to the folks internally who were able to push this through and get this made public and bring that little bit more of transparency to MLS, we are eternally grateful, and we hope it doesn't stop here.
I think for me, the thing that stands out is that like the basis of all of this ends up being storytelling. And that's whether that's like, why do you care about MLS Cup and who wins? That's, you know, any given game, you know, all comes down to that. And I think this just makes the stories of the transfer window, which were already among the most interesting in our sport, that much more interesting. And it sets, for me, for CSOs and clubs, it helps set expectations. Like, fans now know what you have in a bare sense in terms of game. Like, if you see that, like if you're an Atlanta fan, you can credibly say, hey, what can we do with this? There's this oyster that we have in front of us that includes an open head coaching spot and DP spots, but also all this game to improve our roster, whether that be by trade or buying down salaries. Or if you're a Houston fan, you know, and I hate to keep going back to them, it's just because they don't have as much much game. It's like, well, what happened to get us here? And honestly, that's a story that probably Houston needs to tell a little better about the salary cap that was inherited literally years ago, about the international roster spot that was traded away in perpetuity, about all these moves that they've been having to recover from over the course of 3 years, while also saying, oh my God, we actually have a good team. Like, we have a window here. We actually have to go for it. Let's be ambitious. That's, you know, that should be lauded. And some of what they had to do was, you know, borrow from the future to pay for the present. And now they've got to figure out a way to get that accounting into the right space. But those are the sort of stories, that's the sort of richness and understanding that I hope fans can now have, and that CSOs and head coaches can talk about more openly, because the information is open. There's no competitive disadvantage to saying, you know, hey, we have this much game. Like, we can all see it. It's right there. The one thing I would say is we just need to have frequent updates, because it is important to know how this progresses, because the picture that we got on December 19th is not the complete picture. Like, for instance, it does not include the $2 million in GAM that would come from deciding that you are a 2-4 GAM team. Like, which that is not come, included.
That'll come on roster compliance day.
Correct.
So, and, which would and, be
I don't know.
March? I don't even
April,
know when roster compliance day is.
April,
it's the Friday before opening day.
Oh, okay. So it'd be February. Yeah,
good. Thank
20th.
God for Tom. Good. Yeah, good job, Tom. Well done. But what I'm saying is, like, if you're Houston, you're like, okay, well, it looks bad now, but they're going to put $2 million more a game in those coffers. And if you need a little update on how all of this works, just remember, 2025, every team is starting with an annual allotment of $2.93 million in game. Every team is getting that in 2025. You can convert up to $3 million from eligible transfers into game. You can get it via trade from another MLS club. You can, you know, if you qualify from the CONCACAF Champions Cup, you get a little bit more. If you fail to qualify for the playoffs, you get a little bit more. There's all these different things that can push GAM into your coffers, and then you're using it either as a trade or you're using it to buy down salary, which I would argue is the number one thing. It's essentially extending the salary cap. So any final thoughts here?
Just that the best place to follow all of this is SoccerWise. You guys do a great job with it. Having the depth charts with the salary information for every player, including the length of their contract. It's like, it's changed the way I work. So shout out to Charlie Fiction, who I know is the brains behind the operation.
Proud to be an adult in the room.
Proud to be an MVP. I mean, I'm, you know, Tom's boss, in other words. All right. Into murky waters We weighed team by team, all 30 teams, because 2025 will include San Diego FC. 30th season, 30 teams, 2 minutes per team. We're going to try to set the scene for the transfer window to come, because again, in case you missed it, you were listening, and you're on, you know, I don't know, 2x speed, it was in the car, your kids were yelling, you were doing the dishes, something clanked. This is our final show of 2024. So 2 minutes, guys, but I have convinced the powers that be, Anders, to allow me to give you the basics. DP spots open, U22 spots open, available GAM before the clock starts. However, there is no stoppage time. There is no board that goes up at the end that gives you an additional 50, whatever. No. When the whistle blows, that's it. We are moving on. Capiche? We all good?
You say that, but then, like, I don't know, I'll be in the far corner when I'm substituted off, and I'll refuse to go off on the near side. There might be a calf thing I need to be stretched out to stretch that out
if
a little
you
bit.
Do that,
I'm just saying. I'm
if
just
you
saying.
Do that, based on MLS rules, Doyle will also have to leave the field. he will be off.
He'll have to carry me off.
Yeah, be no longer available.
And then we have to stay off the field for two more minutes, which means that we be solos the next team. So,
which,
you know.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. All right, we're going to go reverse order of your final column of 2024, Doyle, which is a team by team transfer needs column. Very convenient for our content on the show. So we will start with the A's, with Atlanta United DP spots. They've filled one of three. Alexi Maranchuk is the one. U22 spots, it's Edwin Mosquera. Available game, it's the most in Major League Soccer. It's $6,500,000 and some change. Start the clock. Anders, in my mind, the big story is, who's the manager? It certainly seems, Tom, like it's going to be Ronnie Dyla. And then what profile of DPs do they go after? Let's start with the manager. What do we know?
So what I know is that these talks are real. He is a finalist. He's one of two finalists. I would say he's the top target, but I will say, I will stress, while everything is fluid, of course, at time of recording, nothing is done. Nothing is, let's say, imminent. Him leaving his job in the UAE obviously can advance this and make this a little bit easier to go at the end. But again, nothing is done, but he is a top target.
Ronnie Dyla, Doyle, give me your quick first thoughts, then we'll hit the DPs.
I mean, makes a lot of sense. Had a lot of success here in MLS, obviously won 2021 MLS Cup. Pragmatic guy, right? Like, not really dogmatic about the exact way that he wants to play. Didn't have a great time at Bruges. So, you know, went back to Europe and managed a big club in Belgium. It did not go well. So we'll see. It's probably a good hire, but it's not a guarantee.
All right, what do we think on the DPs, Tom? What's the rumblings in the
DP 9 is definitely a priority, and then I'm curious to see where they'll use the third one, whether it's going to be at winger, because like Chris Henderson talked about, we need to decide what's best for Alexi Maranchuk. Do we want him further up the field, or do we want him a little bit deeper where he can play line splitting passes to another DP and the DP forward and Saba Lobjanidze, or have him kind of closer to goal? Henderson says that he can do both, and he believes big things from Maranchuk this year, but I think one is definitely going to be forward, and the other one is going to be more, you know, let's just get the best player we can.
Now, hold on. What does that mean? Does it mean, like, in a two, like, behind the 10? Does it mean as a 10 that sort of likes to drift
be
back?
4-2-3-1. It'd be a 4-2-3-1.
Or 4-3-3 with a couple free eights.
Yeah.
Maybe.
If you think about the way his NYCFC team played, it was Maxi as the 10, and he's a true, like, game-controlling number 10. I don't think Maranchuk could do that. I think the way this team is going to go is going to try to get their Maxi and push Maranchuk out to that right wing. I think Maranchuk is better as sort of a force multiplier and not as a guy who has to make the game.
And that works, because then Saba can be on the other wing where he's really direct, he can get in behind. And then you have, if Maranchuk's right winger, then there's Brooks Lennon coming up overlapping, which is what he's really, really good at. But same thing with Pedro Amador on the other side.
All right. I thought there was going to be a buzzer. Communication patterns at an all-time low here. I was waiting for a buzzer. There's no buzzer. I will now set an alarm on my phone for future iterations. Otherwise, we will be playing into stoppage time, like, literally every single
3-hour
time.
3-hour podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Austin FC is up next. DP spots, two filled. Osman Bukhari and Sebastian Driussi. They've got one of their U22 spots filled, Zan Kolmanic, and they've got $3,100,000 some in available GAM. It is an open question, Doyle, as to, basically, what are they going to do? Is it going to be a 2-4 game? Is it going to be 3-3? And the big one, I think, is can Rodolfo Borrell cook? Because he's got a lot of cap space, a lot of roster space to work with. Now he's got to basically get this roster back up to snuff.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Can this guy do the job he was brought in to do? He's really slow played it. I think this is his third or fourth transfer window that he's been in charge, and they really haven't done a lot outside of Bukhari, and I guess the two center or the two defenders that they brought in did just buy out Jossy Zardes, and now they really only have three large salaries on the books. One of those, of course, is Driussi in the final year of his massive deal, about $6.3 million. But this is a roster that needs help everywhere. He's going to have to Rodolfo Borrell. He's going to have to earn his money this window.
Nico Estevez is the head coach. In interesting Weeby news, because I'm a huge Davey Arnault guy back from the old days for the Wizards, Arnault was retained as the top assistant under Nico Estevez. That is news that I care about and Austin fans care about, and I'm not sure others do, but hey, I'm going to give it to you here. Tom, what are the rumblings? What are your feelings on this window for Austin?
I'm curious to see if they're going to go 2-4-2 or the 3-3, because then obviously if it's 2-4-2, they have both DP spots filled. I would expect another center forward. I don't know if it's going to be a DP or not, and they need a lot of depth and maybe another starter in central midfield. They have Danny Pereira and Owen Wolf, but there's room to add there. And maybe central defense as well. I think those are those would be the priorities.
This is a team that, in theory, makes sense for Jeremy Obobese, but Obobese played in a similar system under Lucci Gonzalez, and it didn't go well.
No,
I mean, given all the needs we're talking about, does it not make sense to go 2-4 GAM, knowing that you'll get out of Driussi at the end of this, and then have more flexibility in the GAM department? Or in the DP department, or do you think it makes more sense that they would go be ambitious?
I think it would make sense to be ambitious. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, you could still be ambitious with the U22 initiative.
So. No, that's true. That's true. Here's the buzzer for you right there. Okay.
Can you make a buzzer noise instead?
Yeah, I could. Do you want me to? I could make my own noise.
I would love that. Yes.
I'm going to go that route. I'm going to go that route for sure. For sure. Okay. I will set the timer to 3 minutes, and then with 1 minute left, I will make a yet unknown noise to signify the end of this. Charlotte FC is where we head next. 2 of 3 DP spots filled. Lil Abada, Carol Swiderski reports that they are trying to bring back BL on a non-DP deal. All three U22 spots are filled. Pekovic, Toklamadi, and then Vargas. And they have just a shade under $3 million in GAM, which basically says that almost all their GAM has been used. They have their 2.93. And we start with the big story, Tom. Give me sports. Tom Bogert is reporting that Miguel Almirón may be a future member of Charlotte FC. Fill us in.
It's just give me sport, by the way. It's not plural. Yes, Miguel Almirón.
Well, but give me sports. That was possessive.
It was possessive, Tom. Come on.
Fair play. So Charlotte FC are still in talks to sign Miguel Almirón. They tried to do this in the summer. Newcastle were being, let's just say, unrealistic. They wanted upwards of $20 million. Eddie Howe didn't want to lose a squad player, and since Almirón has played like 119 minutes in the Premier League, so talks have continued. Zoran Krenetta is friendly with the folks there, so it's more like that's not like advance or imminent, but they have his discovery rights. They are still talking for him. A deal could get done in like up to $10 million, including add-ons, so if that base fee is like 6 and then add-on 7, something in that range, I think I'm being speculative here, but I think that would get it done just given where he is. Miguel Almirón, there's still interest from Saudi. He prefers MLS. If he's going to leave, his agent just said he prefers Europe. I think it's more likely that he would come here because Charlotte would give him a bigger contract than anywhere in Europe, and that's where that third DP spot could go to. Swiderski is on to the last year of his deal. Everything I'm being told is that he's likely to leave, but again, we've heard this about players like this in this spot. Regardless, they're going to do the one DP now. Hopefully, if they're able to get off of Swiderski this winter, that could change the plans for this winter or maybe the summer. So keep an eye on that. Doyle, I don't know about you. I think that this is a really strong roster, and if they get Miguel Almirón in and then another DP at some point between now and the summer, I think this is a really, really strong team.
25 seconds, Will.
It's a solid roster, but it won't be a strong roster unless they can add top-tier players. I'm just going to read the five guys who occupy prime roster spots right now. Lyle Abada, Karol Swiderski, Nikola Petkovic, Edin Toklamadi, and Kerwin Vargas. Not one of those guys is a nailed-on starter. Zoran Krenetta does really well within the league and in the Super Draft. He's like 0 for 30 on DPs and U22 so far.
Hee-haw! Hee-haw! That's your... I'm just gonna throw some stuff out there, all right? I'm just telling you right now. You don't know what it's gonna be, all right? Chicago Fire, DP spots, 2 of 3 filled. Hugo Kuipers, Gaston Jimenez remains on this roster, folks. U22 spots, 2 of 3. Brian Gutierrez, Guti, and Federico Navarro. Available GAM, they are basically bang on 2.93. Like, they got the money that they were given. And Doyle, the big story here is, can Greg Berhalter be both a top-tier head coach but also GM and rebuild a roster that has been unrebuildable basically for, I mean, essentially the entire time I've been at MLS, which is almost 2 decades.
Yeah, it's been 15 years since the Fire have really had a successful rebuild, and it's going to take a lot. I think they're off to a good start by signing Jack Elliott. should solidify that back line. I actually like Carlos Tehran, and you know, they keep Wyatt Omsberg as well. I've always liked him a bit, but like this team doesn't get their DPs right. They don't mostly get their U22s right. That said, I like Fede Navarro. It's never really been coached the way I think he needs to. Obviously, Brian Gutierrez is super talented. There's some stuff here to work with, but it is a big ask to be head coach, GM, CSO in 2024 compared to the last time Greg Berhalter was doing that 6-7 years ago. Like, MLS has really entered the global transfer market since then, especially the Chicago Fire, who spent.
I agree with that, but what I would say is, yeah, it's also a lot different than the last time with, you know, with Mikey Stevens and Greg Broughton and whatever else that they have in their scouting department, Eddie Rock, everything else. So they have more resources to help with.
It's going to be a test of Greg's ability to delegate.
Fair, yeah, but again, I think that that's really positive. I don't put the like doubt on him that was earned with the previous regime. This is a completely new regime, so I'm going back to optimistic and giving them some leash. What I am excited, I really love that Jack Elliott signing, and if they add two DPs, if they can get out of Guess on Jimenez, as I expect that they will, whether it's a buyout or a transfer or whatever, they can add two DPs, and this is a team that could spend a total of $20, $30 million on the DPs if they want to. I don't know if they want to. Again, we'll see, but that changes the math here a lot, and I think Hugo Kuipers is going to have an awesome season. Every single center forward under Greg Berhalter in MLS has had their career best season, and Hugo Kuipers is a $12 million signing who needs the system player and the creativity.
Yeah, so I think he's going to score a bunch of goals. Or a chance-creating winger, and I'm sure that they're going after that. I do question whether it'll be two in this window one in this window, one in the summer. The Jimenez thing is interesting, because if they wait till summer, maybe they get him to just sort of leave of his own accord. That allows them to use the buyout on one of their max contract guys elsewhere.
We're going farm animals. I have young children. That's the way it works. All right.
FC's, why don't you honk like a geese?
FC, well, don't challenge me. I just Googled farm animals. So we're gonna go down the
list. Is that a work computer?
Yeah. FC Cincinnati. DB spots, three filled. Lucho Acosta, Kevin Dinkey, Obina Nwodo, who can be bought down and has it in the past. U22 spots, 0 of 3. Question marks about Alvaro Barrial. Available game, about 4.2. A lot of that, you would assume, is coming from the Awazium and Ian Murphy trade. Clock starts now. Big question for me, what's going to happen with Lucho? It feels like that's the domino that will push every other domino down, seemingly.
I agree with that. That's the most important question of this offseason. I haven't gotten a fresh update on this recently, but the last that I was told is that since he obviously wanted us to stay, Chris Albright has said publicly, no bridges have been burned. We're going to keep talking. So if they come back with Lucho Acosta as their 10 with Kevin Denke, Luca Oriano back, like this back line of Kadebe, Oriano? What did I say?
Orshana?
The back three of Hadebe, Miazga, and Robinson is extraordinarily strong, I think. And then if you have the front three of Acosta, a club record, league record signing in Kevin Denke, then that is, I think, a really, really good spot. And again, if Lucho doesn't come back, they're going to spend a lot of money to replace it. There's like, you cannot do better than an MVP, but look at Chris Albright in this front office's track record in hitting big signings. Bupenza, I think, is the one that didn't work out in terms of like at that level.
Well, he got hit.
That's a big signing that got hit. Yeah,
I would give them the benefit of the doubt to do it right. And again, even if you take Lucho out of this team, they still have enough to get by.
Like three hits when you think about it.
You have anything?
I wish that the timer was going, so Weeby would have had to make an animal noise.
I'm gonna offer a hot take. If they get the right offer for Lucho from like say Boca Juniors, they should take it. Because it's so much drama, and it's disappointing because he was like the model citizen for the 2 years preceding whatever happened over the past couple of months to make him behave like this. And I don't think it's that hard to find a great number 10 if you're an MLS team. I would trust Albright and company to find that and Pat to know how to ride that horse.
Colorado Rapids are up next. DP spots filled. Three, Kevin Cabral, Georgie Mihailovic, and Hoffman Avahu. One of three U-22s, that's Cole Bassett, and they have 3.980. They have more GAM, but you would assume they got GAM from the Moise Bombito, and then they moved the GAM because that's what they do for draft picks, and then also Awazi Emeni and Murphy. So, hey, 3.98 is still a good amount for them. Big question, Doyle, is, was last year real, and what in this transfer window will help determine that?
Yeah, rebuilding the central defense was clearly necessary after the Bombito sale. They were just never the same team, which is understandable. He was phenomenal at playing that high line and putting out fires in behind. You don't, like, guys like that don't grow on trees. So rebuilding the defense is number one. Number two is they need a match winning winger. Now, maybe that comes from Georgie Mihailovic playing on the left wing and Cole Bassett moving up to being a pressing 10. I know that was the plan heading into last season. It got derailed via injuries. Even so, I do think they need to add some more quality, one more goal scorer in that attacking group, probably a guy who is primarily a winger.
What I would say is I'm expecting this team, pretty firmly expecting this team to do 3-4-2-1. And definitely switch to the back three of Awazi Emeni and Reggie Cannon and Ian Murphy or some of the guys' name. I haven't said Maxu yet because there are a couple teams in the Middle East that are interested in Maxu, so he could leave. The club wouldn't stand in his way.
Again, and it wouldn't be a Bubakar because he just got moved to Dallas, right? Did we just see
Correct. So again, I'm thinking it's going to be 3-4-2-1, and then the decision is, do you play Cole Bassett in the two next to Connor Ronan, or do you push him higher? And then Georgie Mihailovic is the de facto second striker, and Cole Bassett is the like box running 10.
Don't love that.
Yeah, I would play him more like next to Connor Ronan, and then give him the freedom to get forward, and then you have more defensive security around him with the back three. And then if Keegan Rosenberry is your right wing back, that's a little bit different than Luca Barrial in the past, say, for Cincy.
Wouldn't Kevin Cabral be a reasonable
wing back? Maybe if they want to go more attacking, then Calvin Harris like could fit there too. So like that's fair.
If they're going
to
make a signing, a signing that goes makes us go, oh, where would it be?
Yeah, I think they're going to use their U-22 initiative. I think that they'll bring in a young center back and a young attacker with those.
On to the next one. Not my best blah. I've done a lot better in the past. I'm not going to lie. Columbus Crew, DP spots, 3 of 3 filled. Cucho, Darlington, Nagby, who can be bought down. Diego Rossi. Marino Hinostroza is on loan, but he is a U-22 on their roster. Available GAM. Just a shade under 3.2. And Doyle, the clear and obvious story here is they are elite. Can they stay elite by keeping their elite pieces together, both in the roster and also on the sideline?
Yeah, that's it. That's the whole thing for the Crew. We know that there's gonna be interest in Cucho and Wilfred Nancy, and of the two, I think Nancy is the more irreplaceable. But also further down the roster, guys like Mo Farsi, Max Arfston, Patrick Schulte, they've all had interest from overseas. No one knows this better than Tom, who is nodding right now. And it's a look, every club in the world other than like Real Madrid and Man City is a selling club. That's just a fact. So if the right number gets hit, then suddenly you're rebuilding some crucial pieces. The other thing here, Darlington Nagby is officially a DP. They could buy him down and add one more high-end piece if they wanted to. And that would be especially that would be very manageable if they were to sell someone like an Arfston or a Farsi, because that GAM would just give them a ton of flexibility. And that would be kind of a baller move for a team that wants to win everything that they play in.
So on these links, I don't think that I know that nothing is imminent on either Cucho or Wilfred Nancy. It sounds like that these are more kind of interests than something that's really movable. Again, the Columbus have received nothing from either Monterrey for Cucho and nothing from Saint-Étienne for Nancy. And I've had some cold water from sources outside of the club as well, kind of pour some cold water on that. So I know the club are very confident that Cucho's coming back. Again, you can solve that by giving him a new contract and sorting it that way. And it looks like Nancy, again, it depends on what jobs might open up or what teams are interested in him. They seem to be hopeful / confident that that's going to happen too.
Are there contract talks at all for Cucho? Or is that...
I'm not sure. Again, there should be. And again, these high level stuff.
I just that Anders is now sending me noises. So don't take the choice of noise as any sort of indication of
this
of
is
anything.
A producer's what a decision.
Teammate.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
a teammate right there. Immediately, in case he's that wasn't good enough.
FC
wasn't me.
Dallas. Let's see. 3 of 3 filled, but maybe not for long. Jesus Ferreira, Petar Musa, Alan Velasco, who just signed a new deal. 2 of 2 U22 spots. Giovanni and Inesali, who's not really hit yet, but he's very, very young. Available GAM, there's a lot of it. 4.48 million and maybe more coming, depending on the fate of Jesus Ferreira and Paul Areola. Where are we at with this one, Tom? Is this going to happen, or are we just going to dream about it?
Areola is the one that I'm the most confident in that that's going to happen. I know San Diego made a run at him before the expansion draft, and that was kind of the people around the league were like, yeah, it's definitely happening in Seattle. So I'm very confident that one's going to get done. We'll see about Jesus Ferreira in, like, that's more complicated, but I know that those conversations are real. We'll see what happens there, but those are two that, again, that could happen. Jesus Ferreira, I'm still assuming, has played his last game for the club, whether it's within MLS or going somewhere else, whatever it is. And then, you know, there's other guys that they're trying to get rid of or kind of overhauling the roster. Like, somebody like Sebastian Legette could move on or they would like to move on to free up more space.
Ramiro was signed. He's a Brazilian central midfielder. We'll see. Another guy above the age of 30 in that central midfield. Seems like they're trying to get Juan back, and then Velasco's the big one, Doyle. When you look at this offseason for Dallas, what will define it?
I think it's the big moves. I think it's got to be. When you're talking about players of caliber of Ferreira and Areola, that is probably the headline stuff and probably going to go the furthest towards defining it. But let's not sleep on that back line. They were kind of a mess last year, and Kosi Tafari, unfortunately, regressed massively over what he had been in 2023 when he was excellent. They don't have any young options really coming through. Signing Lalas Abubakar, it makes some sense because he can eat up some minutes, but I think we saw his limitations last year with a pretty good Colorado team. Like, they need to spend time and resources making sure that they've got the right group back there. And I'm not super confident about that. I'm just not, based upon what we've seen the past few years.
Fair enough. I'm very nervous about that one. That was a hard one to do.
So the people, obviously, this is an audio only medium. Getting to watch Weeby build himself up to do this, and like, he can't make eye contact with us in the show. He's looking down. He's like, okay, here comes the buzzer.
I figured if I was going to do this and I was going to make up, but yeah, Andre says I could have just said oink. That's a fair critique of that moment for me. You know, look, we're going all in. This is like we're reading children's books at nighttime, all right? So gather around, ETR audience. DC United, DP spots filled, 3 of 3. Christian Benteke, Mateus Klik, and Matty Poltola.
Can we get to the donkey sound already? Can we
I've
just...
already done it. That was the first one. Hee-haw. That was the first one.
Oh, that's right. All right. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. U20, I see it was very memorable, though. U22, 2 of 3. Teddy KDP. And Gabriel Pirani, 3.38 in GAM. Tom, it just feels to me like for DC, they're in this salary shed, and there might be more shedding coming, and likely will be. And Mateus Klik is kind of the guy that the birds are perhaps circling. What is the stage
of
this rebuild?
What kind of birds and what kind of sound do you think those birds make?
Keep it really for later.
I regretted that imagery because it's not fair. Mateus Klik was a good, very good vultures. Player for them last year, and it's just his salary number and the rebuild status. But what is the status of the rebuild? Like, we're still in shedding, or we're adding, or we're trying to
If they could shed Klik, that's the goal. That's the aim. I'm going to assume that is going to happen again. It's complicated. Don't know if they're going to use a buyout on him if it came to that, but I know that kind of both like, they want to move on from him to open up the DP spot. He's open to moving on. He does love his time in MLS. He knows that he can go back to Poland at any point. Like, he was linked with his first club. Again, maybe that could happen, but I like, there's a possibility he stays in MLS if it's not with DC. So that's a big one that they need to do. What they've done beyond that is Ali Mackay and this front office have done excellent work of getting out of really, really bad contracts in 2.5 windows, essentially. I guess 3 if you count kind of the contract updates. But you look up and down the roster, Klik is the only one where it was signed by a previous regime that it's like, okay, it's time to move on from him. So I like really respect what they've done and how quickly they've done it. That being said, I don't know what the budget would or will be for a new DP if and when Klik leaves. That's one thing I'm curious about, but they have a U22 initiative goalkeeper coming in. I know that they want to use another U22 initiative slot to add to this team. They still have more to build. What I would love to see is if and hopefully when Click leaves to open up that DP spot, that they bring in a big-time kind of DP attacker, maybe not big-time, but just a really effective DP attacker to help with Christian Benteke. And then I think if Click stays within MLS, that would be my favorite outcome because I think he's still a very good player. He's just not quite a DP.
You have 5 seconds, Joel.
Sorry.
No, Tom That's covered it all. No, it's all right. Tom covered it all. I wrote about DC twice this week. If you want to hear my thoughts, go MLSsoccer.com.
So that was me throwing you the ball at the end of the shot clock in a triple team and just being get one up.
I mean, you're a Carmelo fan, so I
know. No, he gets those grenades, and he says, thank you. Oh, I have to
quacks,
shoot.
Speaking of quacks, Houston Dynamo, DP spots 2 of 2. Sebastian Ferreira occupies one. Ezequiel Ponce occupies the other. He was a record signing last year. 3 of 4 U22 spots. We're saying four because we assume it's a 2-4 GAM team. Aliu Anali, who is coming back from injury, and Quiñones. Available GAM, this is what I was referencing, $2.06 million. It is, I believe, the lowest amount of GAM, and this is because they've had to pull it from, you know, whether it be trades or to buy down the cap, they've had to pull it from the future to pay for the present. And they're close to getting out from underneath that. So the big story is, with those restrictions, though they will get the $2 million in game, so it will get topped off, can they find attacking help? They got to find attacking help. And maybe they got to move Sebas Ferreira, and I don't know how they do that other than buyout.
Yeah, that's it. Like, that is the whole story for, not the whole story, but that's most of the story for Houston this window, because they have some good young pieces in place. Quiñones was, I thought, very good in 2023. Mm-hmm. I loved what I saw of Anali, and hopefully we get the same version of him after he recovers from his ACL midseason. I love Brooklyn Reigns. I hope he gets 2,000, 3,000 minutes this year across all competitions. It looked like he's ready. Coco Carrasquilla, you could play him in that sort of false right winger role, or you could slide him back into to be a number eight. To, like, it's all there for this team. They just got to hit down the roster on, like, backup left back, and then they got to buy out Sebas. If they're serious about winning stuff in 2025, they have to get out from under the last year of that deal, and they have to replace him with a high upside player, like a guy who could be a match winner in the biggest games.
I know they're looking. I know they've been scouting for a while now. To try to get that player, and it's not like this front office hasn't tried, and this ownership group hasn't tried. What do you see happening in the winter here, Tom?
Yeah, so DP10 is definitely what they're targeting. I'm like, again, I agree with Doyle that they need to, like, they want to be a 2-4-2 team in, like, long term, and you do that by buying out Sebas Ferreira. Again, I don't know for sure if they would commit to that this year. Like, I would love to see them bring in a DP. I don't know if that... I don't want it to be relying on Sebas Ferreira leaving or not. Now, one more thing is that they have $2 million GAM, the least in the league. Teams get, like, 2.7 or 2.8 GAM every year. So they're already operating at a deficit.
Yeah, 9-3. Yep.
And that's, again, I think, like what you said, that tells a tale of what they inherited when Pat Onsett and Asher Mendelsohn took over, of just how bad and how bleak their asset situation was.
Meow.
All right.
On to the next.
All right. Good. Yep. Barnyard Cat. I like that.
Yeah. Sporting Kansas City. DP spots filled. 3, but that could change. Alan Pulido, Daniel Shalwey, and Nemanja Radoya. And then 2 of 3 on the U22 side, Logan Ndembe, and then also if a Robert Volader. And then available GAM is about 3.4. So, I mean, like, this is a rebuild, right? It's a rebuild. So what does the next era look like, Tom? Let's just start with what you're hearing and sort of the rumblings around the team, and then maybe we can turn around and try to plot this out.
So what I will say on their DP spots, only Alan Pulido has to be a DP. The other two can be bought down. And again, I'm hoping and choosing to be optimistic that they will be. They've rotated their DP spots to whatever kind of maximizes their allocation money. They've done that well in the past because, again, it's really only been Pulido that has to be a DP at this point. So I hope to see a DP10. They've needed that for more than a year now since Gotti Kindle left. And then, you know, a complete overhaul of the midfield that should allow Jake Davis to go back to right back. They brought in what should be a starting level center back last summer. So what they need is a new midfield and maybe another attacking piece.
Where's this all headed?
I'm not sure I love the idea of Davis going back to right back. I thought he was excellent in central midfield. Like, he's a guy who grew up idolizing Roger Espinoza, and you could see it in how he plays. And I think he's a guy who adds that much value both with and without the ball, both in possession and out of possession. Like that's a winning player and you want to put him in the most important spots on the field. What they've been missing for a long time is a number 10 who's comfortable in the pockets and can receive the ball under pressure and make plays. They haven't really had that since Benny Failhaber, as far as I'm concerned. I would hope that's where they look, but given that Pulido's contract is massive and he's probably there through the end of next year, I kind of suspect they'll be doing a 4-2-3-1 with Pulido as a 10 playing underneath. Yeah, I mean, he did it a bunch in the second half of the season, Peter Vermees did. With Pulido playing underneath Willy Agata. And I will say, Willy Agata's underlying numbers continue to be absolutely excellent. I think he's got something like 22 goals in like 3,200 minutes in MLS since he arrived. Like, he's a starting caliber nine.
That's like,
you didn't have your heart in that one.
Well, I was trying to do an aggressive, like, you came up on the door, I don't know who you are sort of bark. But
that was aggressive?
I'm going to let that slide, Tom. I'm going to let that go. I'm going to pretend like you didn't just say that to me right now. LAFC. No, Anders. You stop. It's a zero dog in me. Negative X dog. This is, I would not fit in on a Pablo Mascherini team. LAFC, DP spots, 2 of 3 filled. Denny Bawanga, Olivier Giroud, U22 spots. Got those filled. Omar Campos, David Martinez, Christian Oliveira, available game, 3.77 million. And the question is about that open DP spot, because this is a no doubt 3-3 team you would see, and all signs point to it. Antoine Griezmann, what do we think?
Are they a no doubt 3-3 team? Because they have literally not carried a third DP the past couple of years. And it's bizarre because they've come so close
to winning stuff
so many times. It's like, oh, you're one piece away. So they should be a no doubt 3-3 team. And I think they will be this year. It's just a question of, do they get Griezmann in the winter
or do they
get him in the summer?
To be fair, they've always valued flexibility. Like that's what it's been about in large part, because they've always gone in the summer and added very large pieces and wanted to have the opportunity to do so. So I don't think it's necessarily fair to be like, they haven't gotten the piece they needed in certain moments, no doubt.
Right.
But they've been about having it open, and that's what they're doing with Griezmann, right? You keep him open for him.
But my point is, if you can get Griezmann in, then you throw away the 2-4 game. It's just not realistic. It's Griezmann, it's Bouanga, it's Giroud.
I think that that's what they've been holding this spot for. And to your point of in the past, that's fair. But last year, I know that this is the idea, is to keep this spot open for Antoine Griezmann, when that he comes to this team. What I'm more curious in the interim is this going to be back to 4-3-3, or are they going to commit to the 5-2-3? Because I don't
think they only have two central midfielders.
Yes,
on the roster.
They need to rework the midfield. So that would be the follow-up question of, okay, where does that go? Can they get Lewis O'Brien back? The report was that his purchase option was $7 million. That's too much. And that would make him almost definitely a DP. So that can't really happen. If they can get him back on a cheaper number, I think that'd be good. Can Jude Terry win a few minutes this season? Are we going to get their first really, really talented home player in the first team, maybe? Better. That was better.
What do you think that was?
That was better.
What do you think that was?
Little Wayne and Birdman.
It was a bird. It was a fowl. What kind of fowl?
Was it like a pheasant? Is that a
Go back to the Midwest, bro.
Quail?
That was a
quail.
Our birds don't sound like that here.
That was a turkey. Right.
Isn't a turkey just gobble gobble gobble?
Yeah, but if you just spell it out and you don't try to actually do it, we're here. Come on now.
I'm worried about what Cam and Wyatt are learning, man. This ain't right.
Oh boy, I've really opened up Pandora's barnyard on this one. LA Galaxy, 3 of 3, Ricky Pooj, Gabriel Peck, Joseph Paintsil. 2 of 3 on the U22 side, Julian Aude, who is returning from injury, and Dejan Jovalic. They have $2.4 million in GAM available. It's another one of, can they keep the band together? Taylor came on the show and was sort of like, they got some real issues as far as their cap goes, and it didn't seem that way to us, but maybe you have a better idea what they're trying to do. And then it's like, who fills in for Ricky while he's out? Those are the big questions.
Yeah, the trying to keep as many players as possible. People have been telling me towards the end of the season it's going to be really difficult to keep this roster together because it's expensive, it's in prime, everything else that goes with it, all the allocation money to buy players down. A guy like Diego Fagundes is somebody on a significant cap hit. Can they keep him? Can they keep both him and Gaston Brugman next season? Before MLS Cup final, people were saying Gaston Brugman makes sense as a buyout guy. Like, that's probably what they do, and then maybe trade Fagundes, right? Like, so I'm very curious to see what happens there. And then to your point, who kind of replaces the everyday minutes, I guess, of Ricky Pooch and what he does in terms of usage rate. Marco Royce can do that most of the time. He's not doing it for 3,000 minutes, obviously, at this stage of his career, and like he plays different than Ricky does. So I'm curious as that. Are we going to get more from Gabriel Peck and Joseph Painsale in the buildup, or is this going to unlock kind of a new version that we hadn't seen of them when Ricky is being as ball dominant as he is, as he should be?
Or is it going to be the MLS Cup version, which is like we're fine to play?
Yeah, we'll have 42% possession
on the break.
Bring your lineup. We can get in behind that every freaking time.
I doubt that.
Yeah, I do too. It's never been Greg Vanney's MO other than when he's been forced into it. I don't think he'll feel like he's forced into it. I just want to say, underpinning all of this, it's beyond time for the Galaxy to start making use of their academy and their second team in a way that would sort of soften the blow of roster builds like this one. Not that it, like, they won MLS Cup, so they deserve all the flowers in the world, but like, it makes it easier to keep the floor high if you're able to get something out of the players in your academy. And of course, there is no better market for talent in the United States of America than Southern California. So I would love to see some, beyond Jalen Neal, some of the young players get a chance here with this team. Maybe they'll find some answers.
That's terrible. It's supposed to be a honk for a
goose. We ruined his confidence. We need to do better.
The goose was, Anders gave me the goose and I didn't know how to do
it
the goose.
It sounded more like a swan. That was more like a swan honk.
Yeah, that was like, I don't know, very nasally. Now I feel like a silly goose myself. So Inter Miami, DP spots filled, 2 out of 2, Lionel Messi, Sergio Busquets. Incredibly, this is a 2-4 game team. 4 of 4 U22 spots filled. Facundo Farias is back off of a season-ending injury. Federico Redondo, Benjamin Cremaschi signed a new deal that got him here, and then Tomas Aviles, and they have 3.3 in available game, but they don't have Chris Henderson. So the big story is, I would say, like, how do they survive, or how do they surprise us and also get under the cap with all the things that they'll inevitably want to do?
You go ahead, Tom. You got this.
Good use of our time here so far. I'm curious to see what other departures may come. Russell, I've been told, could be available. Yeah,
that feels like one, just a shit salary.
They're going to get allocation money from the Diego Gomez. I don't know if that's kind of what was accounted for in the GAM that they released. Regardless, that's going to be very helpful. Is Jordi Alba a DP next season? What else happens? Are they going to, you know, look to go back into the U22 initiative market if they move on from one of these other players? I don't know. I think that those are all the questions being asked. But looking at this roster right now, it's still extremely strong. One more trade candidate, Leo Campana. I was told from people around the league that it was like $2 million in allocation money or something in that region could get it done. I would be trying to trade for him if I was another MLS team. And if I could scratch up the GAM for that, that'd be very good. But these are some of the questions being asked. And then Drake Callender, do they want a different goalie? I wouldn't want a different goalie, but that doesn't mean that they're not going to, right? Like, so these are all things to keep in mind, that this is always going to be a roster dance every year with them under Messi,
And we don't know who's going to be leading the dance. That is the other thing with Chris Henderson's departure. Yeah, go ahead.
The director of football.
Are we sure that he's the guy with his hands on the wheel making the final call?
Yes, but with Miami, the ownership is extremely involved. Tata Martino had a big say when he was the manager. I'm sure Javi Mascherano will as well. But yes, it's a lot of cooks in the kitchen situation, and they've gotten rid of every single person who understands an MLS salary cap. So let's see how that happens, how that helps.
Yeah. I mean, if I was looking at it, I would just say figure out a way to add 2 starting defenders, maybe David Martinez being one to bring back. And as we talked about on the last show, Jesus Murillo makes so much sense for this team as a free agent. If they could do that, like, I would be confident in 75 points and 2 trophies.
The question is how much they got to pay for it, but Minnesota United.
Was that a mourning dove or an owl?
That was an owl. I think, look, it started with a little bit of a, like, something caught my throat. You know, maybe that was like a a mouse from the night before or something.
Choked up about reading children's books to your kids.
Yeah. Minnesota United, DP spots, 3-3. Joaquin Pereira, Teemu Pukki, but that could change in the summer. And Kelvin Yeboah, U22 spots, 2-3. Bongi and Sengbin are the two U22s. And then they have 4.54 in available game. It definitely feels, Doyle, like Khalid El-Ahmad has credibly cooked here, and now it's an opportunity to keep cooking because he's got the ingredients.
Yeah, he's done such good work, really starting in the summer with the addition of Yeboah, but now selling Miggy Tapias for it was about $1 million to Chivas, and being able to craft a coherent team out of a lot of leftovers, but then a very few additions. Now the big thing is, like, can they add those ceiling raisers, those floor raisers in central midfield? Because if you watched them play in the playoffs, you saw a lot of good things as long as they kept the ball in front of them, but they weren't super dynamic in changing phases from anything but like absorb to counterattack. Like, they got that down, but as soon as they had to play a little bit, the Galaxy just ran right through them, and it's just a talent deficit in the most important part of the field. So whether they buy out the final 6 months of Pukki's contract and go for their DP 6-8 now or summer, like, that is the big questions.
Yeah, Pukki's contract expires this summer. What I know about this group and what they're thinking is, again, I don't know this 100%, but this is, I'd feel really strongly that this is a 2-4 GAM team, because they want to play high tempo, they want to play with young players, they want to play with development players. So I'm assuming that when Pukki's contract is done, or if they buy him out, that they're going to go 2-4-2. And that would be leave open two U22 initiative slots, I believe. And I'm very curious to see where they're going to spend it on.
I mean, that would be two U22 spots you could spend. And yes, then that would also mean you would have, depending on how their TAM situation is right now and who they have to buy down and how they get the contracts under, you could go get some real, like, mid salary starting caliber difference makers for this team as well.
Your mic didn't even pick that one up. It's just the frequency was so high.
That was a orca requested by Anders.
So we've moved away from we're on to SeaWorld now.
Yeah, we're in a certain spot. And because we need to speed this up, I'm just going to start the clock as I start the open. So we're on to CF Montreal. Zero DPs on this roster. Two U22s, George Campbell and Osunisi Ibrahim. They have 2.94 in game, so basically bang on what they've been given. They have no designated players. What are we doing at the top of this roster? What are we doing?
I honestly think that's less of a question than how good is Laurent Courtois going to be at player development? Because whether they sign one DP or two or none, it's very clear that they're not going to be playing at the same poker table as Chicago and Atlanta. It's all going to be about trying to make the most out of the young players that are already on the roster, be it kids from the academy like Nathan Saliba, or be it the Caden Clarks, Jaquiel Marshall Ruddies of the world. Like, this is okay, coach, make this group sing. It doesn't matter that we're bottom of the table in salary spend.
Yeah, they may well end up having technically people on the as designated
Kokoro
players, because it makes more sense in allocation money. But, like, rest assured, this isn't like a team that's going out and spending $6 million. Like, they're not even, they used to at least get loans from Bologna for the players who weren't playing at Bologna that were good. Like, Tider was a good example. Not even doing that anymore. I don't understand what the point is. I just don't. I feel for Corey Ray. I feel for Laurent Courtois. Yeah. They're doing the best with what they can. I think Corey Ray made a few really good moves in the summer. Caden Clark, I kind of poo-pooed that myself. That has been an excellent trade. I really like Jaquiel Marshall Ruddy. That's what they're going to be. Like, that's all that, like, ownership is going to give them.
I hear you on that one, but, like, when they did all that, they sold all those players, developed them. They had Wilfred, but they also had Wanyama in the midfield sort of as a steadying presence.
That was their last real-life DP signing, right? And that, even that was, like, an MLS 1.5 signing.
That's a coyote.
That was excellent. That was excellent.
Good. That's leading us into Nashville, right? Is that our segue?
Yes. Yes. Wow. Nashville all SC. Right. DP spots open. 3 of 3. Hani Mukhtar. Well, not open. They're all filled. Hani Mukhtar, Sam Surridge, Walker Zimmerman.
Sorry. He nailed it. He nailed it, and he lost his head.
We came off Montreal, and they had none of them, and it just was hard. And then U22 spots. Patrick Yazbek is your one, and then there's rumors about a Norwegian winger as well. Available GAM. They have 2.5. Big story. Will Timothy come to a game to see Foot Mozart? I mean, that's what I'm thinking about mostly. Which Hani is coming back? Is Yazbek good? There's a number of questions here, but they seem locked in on at least their DP spots. Really, the way they could change the roster is on the U22 side and maybe some TAM signings. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, they're in a tight spot in terms of their big pieces on the roster. They get a 3 DP spots. They have a U22 initiative, so they can do some stuff in the U22 initiative. We'll see what BJ Callahan can do with young players. Obviously, Gary Smith wasn't promoting a ton of young players. They weren't signing many young players by the end. What they're going to need is more shrewd in-league additions or more shrewd just general pickups. Like, that has kind of buoyed this team throughout their time in MLS. Like, you think of Joe Willis, Daniel Lovitz, Dave Romneitz, and you kind of go Anibal Godoy, Dax McCarty. You go on down the list.
Lucas McNaughton was one of those. They just traded him to DC.
Yeah. So that's where they need to make their differences on this roster, that the U22 initiative, and they've been much better at the former than the latter. So I'm curious where it goes.
Yeah, it's ball progression through midfield. There was just no replacing Dax McCarty last year, and it's a big reason why Hani looked terrible last season, and that is hanging over all of this. It's like, is Hani going to be able to get back to 90% of his MVP caliber self? If not, then this team has massive problems and a very low ceiling. Wolfman?
Bear.
A lion.
Okay.
Lion, bear, wolfman. You know, it's something that should scare you and you should, well, either run from or stand as large as you can and make yourself big. Either way.
Hey, bear.
Just try to survive. Bear. Just try to survive out in these woods, all right? New England Revolution, 3 spots of 3 on the DP side filled. Tomas Chankalai, Carles Hill, Giacomo Vrioni. Luca Langoni is the one U22 they have filled. They have a bunch of GAM, 5.6 basically. They've signed 2 center backs recently, and the rebuild is rebuilding. Will it pop? What do you think? Where are we at?
They have to have hit on those center backs. They just spent a good chunk of money on those center backs. And if you have a good center back pairing in MLS, you're going to be a pretty good team. So that, I think, is going to define a lot of it for the Revs. The other big piece is Vrioni. There's a lot of rumors, our friends at the Bent Musket, saying that there are multiple European teams. I think Chalara in Belgium, one of the Turkish league teams as well, all interested in Vrioni. If they can get off him and bring in a new DP number 9, then maybe they're cooking.
That their GAM pool can increase. Noel Buck's loan to Southampton U21s is up this winter. Esmer Barak-Tarevich, there's a lot of real interest in him. So we'll see what else happens. But they will then have 2 U22 initiative slots. Obviously, a ton of GAM, which is going to help to buy down those 2 new center backs. And then if Rioni leaves, then another DP. So there's still more work to do. This is absolutely going to be curtained off on Caleb Porter's team by opening day, and everything will kind of fall with that. So you can give them the benefit of the doubt because the last year was spent overhauling a roster that I don't think that we were expecting to be overhauled. But right now, this team is going to be significantly different in a month and a half than it was when they inherited it. And we'll see if it's better.
That's the part I would say. I don't know if we can give them the benefit of the doubt. I think we can say you've had a good opportunity to bring in the pieces that...
Caw-caw! Caw-caw! Yeah. How do you like it, Weeby?
Yeah, I like it. I really like it. I think Doyle's got this for the rest of the way. New York City, we're going to speed up, folks. We just have to do it. 2 out of 3 spots. Santi Rodriguez, Thiago Martins, U22 spots, Julian Fernandez, Jovan Mijatovic, and Agustino Heda, 3.2 available in GAM. I mean, the big story is, who's the coach? And can he get the most out of these guys that they spent a bunch of money on? I mean, that's the story.
I think that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing right there. Like, they might make one prime addition, be it a third DP or a fourth U22. I'm not going to say it doesn't matter. What matters most is, can the new coach, whoever it is, get the most out of the young guys who basically didn't play much at all the second half of the last season?
You have anything on the coach that you can share publicly, Tom, or is this all...
I've got nothing. There's been rumors that are flying around. I don't know what's real, what's not. I'm still going to go back to, I'm just assuming it's going to be somebody with City Football Group connections.
All right.
That's good.
New York Red Bulls. DP spots filled. Hey, it's all three now. Emil Forsberg, Dante Van Zier, Erik-Maxime Choupo-Moting, who has officially signed as a designated player. Two of the three U22 spots in Noah Ayla and Dennis Ganghar, and then they have 3.9 in GAM. Was Erik-Maxime Choupo-Moting, who might blow it up, he might crush it, he might score 15 to 20 goals and have 10 assists. Was that the DP that we were asking for? And what does it mean for the rest of the DPs? Like, it feels like if that's the DP, is Dante Van Zier, should he be on the roster as a DP? I'm not sure.
So that's an optimistic way to look at it, so that you could say, okay, if they're bringing in Choupo-Moting as a DP, does that mean that they're planning for Van Zier to leave? So what their issue was last year was they were really good when everybody was available and really bad when even just one or one and a half of the players weren't available, and specifically Forsberg and Morgan. Those two are not going to play 34 matches in the regular season. They're just not. They international duty, injury history, age, everything else. So the idea with that other DP spot, I was hoping it was going to be a younger player or a young in prime player that you could more realistically bank on giving you 2,800 minutes. Choupo-Moting is not that. He still might be a very good player, but I don't like this can help the team in a playoff run. I don't think that this is going to be a huge, huge boost for their regular season, at least in the way that, say, a younger player would be. Again, that doesn't mean that he'll be a bad player, but I'm curious to see what happens for the rest of the offseason. A new center back's coming soon.
Just ambition. Yeah, Weeby, you're muted.
Take it away. It's all you.
No, it's just ambition. It's the picture of you holding the whiteboard that says more ambition on it, and that's what the Red Bulls need, whether it's another DP or U22s or anything else under the sun. They should behave like one of the LA teams or Miami.
Caw, caw. That was he said I should go crow here, so I win. Mm-hmm. Orlando City, 2 of 3 filled. Luis Muriel and Martino Heda. Facu Torres is off to Brazil. 1 of 3 U22 spots filled. That's Ramiro Henrique, who's been a very good player for them. 3.99 available GAM, but who replaces Facu?
I'm going to take this one. Yeah, I'm going to take this one, Wee, because I honestly think, given how Oscar Pereja likes his team to play, and given how long he took to warm up to Martin Ojeda as a number 10, I think it makes more sense to move Ojeda out to the right wing to replace Facu and get more of a game controlling number 10 in there, especially because on the global market, 10s are actually cheaper than wingers, because everybody in the world wants a winger, but there are few leagues where the number 10 is still as prominent as they are in MLS. So that is going to be my prediction for Orlando City. And if they get that right, I think they have the pieces in place to be a really good team again.
Could I talk you into them going to a 3-4-2-1 with David Brekalo joining Robin Jansen and Rodrigo Slagle to give Dagger Dan and Rafael Santos more freedom going forward? And then you play Martino Ojeda.
It's a club they should put in the bag. But I think 3-4-1-2, given that they have three freaking, you know, high level center forwards in theory anyway, and Enrique Maguire and Luis Muriel.
Yeah. Weeby, are you about to talk?
You hear that?
No.
Okay. Well, that's a bald eagle. That is a bald eagle screaming. Not loud enough. Oh, man. Philadelphia Union, DP spots, 2 filled. Daniel Gazdag and Mikel Ua, and then 1 of the U22 spots filled. Makana is the one U22. We haven't really seen him. 4.2 in a game. They don't have a coach, and the coach we thought they would get went to Red Bull Salzburg. And it's who's the coach, and are they going to get more out of this return to helter-skelter soccer?
I think they will. Doyle, I think you and I may disagree on this one, but I'm going to use one of your arguments of that, like, these teams that play this way are always really solid regular season teams. This was how they started, and they've kind of changed a little bit. They've tweaked under Jim Curtin over the recent years, particularly last year when he felt like they needed to change it up to get back into the playoff race, get back towards something better and what a better version of them. That's not going to be this year. They're going to be top 5 in in pressures. They're going to be top five in sprints. They're going to be top five in high intensity. All of that. This is going to be a 100% car crash soccer team. And that has been very successful under Ernst Tanner when he first got here. Let's see if he can find more signings like Kai Wagner and Kasper Schabilko at the beginning. And Daniel Gazdag, I think, has been underrated. We talk about what he isn't, but what he is for, you know, $2.7 million transfer, all of the goals he's brought in. Yes, a lot of penalties. Jose Martinez, we didn't know who that was. We didn't know who Jacob Glesnes is. We didn't know all these players going down the list. So Ernst Tanner has proved that he can do it in this way. And it's going to be more difficult without Jim Curtin, but it's going to be 100% of what he wants.
Give me the opposing view.
I just think they have a lot of players who are better soccer players than they are runners, right? Especially the kids coming through the academy, Jack McGlynn being one, and hopefully Kevin Sullivan being the other. Danley Jean-Jacques, from what we saw of him, might fit into that category as well. So I think Tom's right. It's not necessarily what I would like to see. That said, we're going to see a ton of homegrown minutes from this team next year, and I always do like that.
All right, on to the next. Oh, I forgot to do a... we'll get it better next time. Portland Timbers, DP slots filled, two of three, Evander, Jonathan Rodriguez. U22 spots, I've got three, Anthony, Aishala, and Santiago Moreno. They have 2.7 in available GAM. The big story, Doyle, what's going to go on with this attacking quartet? I mean, everybody has had rumors around them, whether or not they're real or not. You know, we don't, our transfer window literacy is, we're still working that into full form here. But yeah, the rumor mill is a churning.
Yeah, Tom, why don't you take it?
Yeah, so Felipe Mora, Jonathan Rodriguez are who that they're planning around. There have been rumors around those two players. I'm told that they haven't gotten any real offers and that they want both of those players to be here. They are in talks for Kevin Kelsey. I'll just say you don't trade for the rights of first refusal to negotiate without having a pretty clear idea of what the terms would be to bring that player into the team. So I'm expecting Kevin Kelsey to get done, and I really like that fit with this team. Who knows what's going to happen with Evander? I haven't heard anything change, which would lead me to believe that there would be a exit, but maybe cooler heads have prevailed. Holiday season, the forgiving season, maybe there's a way back.
And a center back would be nice.
They are definitely trying. They were in on Jack Elliott. They were in on Andres Reyes. They were in on Tine Tadabe before.
They have spent so much money on center backs. Like, that is not a cheap back line that they've got there. And they have some guys who I think play good ball. It's weird. It was a weird season for Portland. It was
club,
a very
club,
strange
club,
ending.
Club.
Is that a fish?
I don't know. That's turtle? He just said say glub. So I am but a puppet to the puppet master. RSL, two of two DP spots filled. We think they're going to go with this 2-4 game. It looks that way. Chicho and Diogo Gonçalves would be their DPs. Then Diego Luna, Marshuk, Ojeda, and Palacio would be the U22 guys. 4.13 in available game. And the big story, I think, Doyle, is just will the pieces they picked up in the summer hit? Like, they have a bunch of dudes. Like,
yeah.
Talented.
And yeah, like that's the whole of it. Will these guys, like, is Pablo going to be able to craft something coherent and a step better than what he was able to put together in 2024? Remember Pedro Ruiz coming back as well. And then the only potentially confounding factor is, do they get an offer for Diego Luna that they feel like they have to take? And if they do, then that changes the shape of the offseason.
Yeah, for me, I really like what Marchuk looked like at the end of the season last year after he came in. I think that this is going to be a very good player for this team. Again, we talk about the Andres Gomez. It's really easy to just liken that career path, but like Marchuk showed more immediately than Andres Gomez did. And again, that's no disrespect to Gomez, but like I have really big hopes for Marchuk next season. And then the biggest question for me is, none of it matters if Chicho Arango is the guy he was in the second half of the season rather than the first half of the season, because this team cannot overcome Chicho Arango being bad. I don't even think that they can. Quack, him being quack, average.
Quack.
You're stealing my noises. San Diego FC has just made a signing. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Yes.
They have. Okay. Yeah, so they have one DP, Irving Lozano. They have one U22 who they snatched off Orlando in the expansion draft in Heine Brusseth. And they also have 5.1 in available GAM. And now they have what, Tom?
They have Anibal Godoy. That's who they just signed in free agency. I'm very curious if this is viewed as a starting level piece, because by the end in Nashville, he wasn't. But that adds another veteran to a midfield that is going to have a few veterans. And they still need a couple more starters there. I'm curious to see where they go from here. Again, Chucky Lozano is their guy. Tyler Heaps told you guys on the very good expansion draft show that they are very close on a designated player. But then his next sentence was, yeah, but we need to make sure we have the right player at the right fee and stuff. So I don't know if he was saying very close on a specific target or very close just in the process. So I don't know where that spot's going to be. I'm assuming central midfield or maybe on the wing, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it'll be a right winger. I don't think it'll be someone as big a name as Chucky, but it'll be a full-on DP probably in his prime. And then for central midfield, I would expect them to use U22 slots. But all of this is like the questions around San Diego are the same questions that we see for every expansion team is, can they get enough talent in the door and how quickly can it become a cohesive actual team?
Awkward silence. Yeah, awkward silence. Yeah, you didn't. Yeah, that was awkward silence. Okay. Just
was that an animal noise?
No, it was awkward silence.
Okay,
that's another inspired Anders.
Oh, that was on purpose.
Yes. It was supposed to be a cricket.
Jesus Christ. We are running on fumes Santa here, boys. Bear, we are running
yeah,
in.
Yeah, let's get this thing done. We got five teams. We're going to motor through. San Jose Earthquakes. They got all the DPs. Espinoza, Hernan Lopez, Greza. They don't got a U22. They got 3.5 in game. They got Bruce Arena. Can he trade for more guys he knows from MLS? Nick Lima, come on down. Where is this going? What are we looking at here, Tom?
So they need to get rid of Carlos Carrizo if they want to make Brandon Vasquez happen. I haven't gotten an update there because, again, it is real. They want to sign Brandon Vasquez, but they were, you know, Monterrey weren't going to get too close on talks until the season ended. Their season just ended. I don't know what direction that they're going in. I haven't
heard
an update there.
Same as it always does.
But for them to sign Brandon Vasquez, Carlos Carrizo would have to leave. And look at how many center mids they brought in. That is clearly the plan for Carlos Carrizo to leave. And then another spot is, are they going to use U22 initiative slots? If John Fisher is going to come through on his promise to Bruce Arena that they're going to spend more, these are four slots that they can. A big deal for Vasquez, they're not going to, it would be in the region of $7.5-$8.5 million for Monterrey to sell. And then the U22 slots, you can spend a lot of money. Look at what New England just did with Luca Langoni. That was like a $7 million fee.
I mean, look at what New England did with Dylan Barrera a few years ago. Like, that's a guy who was so good under Bruce with the Revs. He is, I believe, a free agent, as in out of contract, not technically an MLS free agent. I would love to see them bring him in and rehab his value, because he was literally breaking into the Colombian national team before he did his ACL a couple of years ago. And I hope he could get back to that level. And I would love to see it happen for San Jose.
Seattle Sounders. Yeah. 1 of 3, Pedro de la Vega. 1 of 3, Pedro de la Vega. Interesting. U22 spots, 2 of 3, Leo Chu, Josh Atencio. Also interesting. 4.2 in GAM. Big stories. Can they re-sign Rusnak as a DP, as a free agent? And can they pull off the Ferreira and Areola moves? I mean, I think kind of that's the long and the short of it, no? The rest of the roster is pretty, you know, despite that sort of like, oh, DP and U22 reaction, Doyle, the rest of the roster is very good.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like, you covered it. It's like, can they get Rusnak back, most likely as a DP? Can they get Ferreira in? Can they get Areola in? They're playing in 5 different competitions. Anders has promised that they're going to win all 5. They would need depth to do that.
And that comes from raising your floor with guys like Jesus Ferreira and Paul Areola, particularly Paul Areola, if he counts on the budget for like $600,000. That's a no-brainer. I think that's excellent. Jesus Ferreira is more
tricky. So in
the
paying for all this, because you got to pay for it to get him, like to a certain degree, that would probably be $2 million more in GAM that you're banking on going 2-4.
Oh, I thought you were saying how much Areola costs, because it's good.
No, because he's not going to be a DP. And then, you know, Jesus Ferreira.
I mean, Craig Weibel said a couple of months ago that they're going to have 3 DPs next year. But CSOs say a lot of stuff. Looking at this roster, the guys that they want to bring in and the reporting that Tom's done and our friends at Sounder at Heart have done is that they're trying to talk Jesus Ferreira down to a max TAM deal. That would lead me to think that 2-4 GAM is a plausible, if not entirely likely,
with some flexibility within that, right? Because you don't have to fill all those spots. You could have 2 and 3 and then have the 2 million in GAM. Then you could conceivably go pick up a, I don't know. Anyway, St. Louis City, DP spots filled, 3 of 3, Roman Berkey, Marcel Hartl, and Zhao Klaus. 2 of 3 on the U22 side, Chris Durkin and Jake Girdwood Reich. We haven't really seen much of. And 5.3 in available GAM. I mean, the meal is on the table. It's just time to eat. I don't know what this transfer window looks like.
They went out and they got a veteran center back whose name I'm just blanking on right now, which is their biggest.
Giannis Horn?
Yeah, no, the one. They just signed him.
He's German.
A couple of weeks ago, which is what
so
they need.
The
they need
the
to, exactly.
They need to rebuild that back line and make sure that it is as good as the rebuilt attack was in the second half of last year. And I think making that one addition and then integrating Horn, like that has to be the plan. And that allows them to keep the powder dry for the summer window, which of course is when they made their big moves in 2024.
Toronto FC, 3 of 3 on the DP side, Lorenzo Insigne, Bernardeschi, Richie Larea. Malula is their only U22. They got 3.3 in GAM. Can they get rid of Insigne, Tom? That really is the only question I'm asking about this rebuild right now.
I think they can. If you made me guess right now, I'd say I think that they will. That's not definitive. I can't report that with any certainty, but based on what I'm hearing, based on what
you
I know.
You could just say it on a podcast, though.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying that this isn't a definitive. This I'm saying with sources, it's 100% happening.
At this point, again, nobody's listening.
A little bit loose. A little bit more loose. And we're punch drunk at this point after all of the animal noises. I would assume that. I don't know it for sure, but I think that would be the best way out of this for all.
That would be the hope, I would assume, for Toronto, and I'm sure that they are trying to explore every possibility. And we end with the Vancouver Whitecaps, who have 3 DP spots filled, Gauld, Kubas, and Armstrong. All 3 U22 spots filled in Caicedo, Ocampo, and Vite. They got 3.6 in GAM, and the future of the club is relatively unknown in terms of ownership and where this project is also going. But they have a pretty solid team here. What could they add to it, Doyle?
A coach. I mean, I really like this roster based upon what we saw of them against LAFC in the playoffs. Like, this is as close as the Caps have ever been to that upper echelon. Replacing Fafa Picot to some degree is going to be crucial for them. They need someone who will attack that space in behind, who will play on both sides of the ball from out wide. But like, that is the only obvious need. In terms of personnel, the rest of it is like, okay, can whichever coach they bring in to replace Vanni Sartini, can he get 5% more from the guys who are already there? And I think that's what Axel Schuster was banking on. He said it was time to make a move. Vanni brought us as far as he could. So that's, you know, in terms of the how will they perform stuff, which is obviously dwarfed by future of the club stuff, given that they are up for sale. The coach is the big question.
I've brought us as far as we could hope to go, I would say, folks. That's it for us for 2024. Tom, thank you so much for joining us for the show. And, you know, just generally.
We'll see you on Soccer Wise in 2025.
Exactly.
How's that sound?
Exactly.
Sounds great to me.
All right.
See you guys there.
We'll see you on the other side as well. To everyone, enjoy your holidays. Enjoy your time with friends and family. Enjoy the opening of the transfer window. This is the, this is the crazy time. Adios.